Today's guest may be one of the busiest people we've ever met. Sharon M. Draper is an author and educator and quite prolific at both. The latest of her 30-some-odd books is called Stella by Starlight. The title character comes face-to-face with racism in the Deep South in the Depression. It and the previous books are generally written for younger readers. They include the bestseller Out of Mind. Sharon Draper has won many awards for both her books and her teaching. She's been Ohio Teacher of the Year, National Teacher of the Year, won the Coretta Scott King Literary Award 5 times, and been honored at the White House 6 times. Sharon Draper, it's a pleasure to have you on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, it's a delight to be here.
You call yourself a dreamer on your website, Sharon. I just wonder when you have time to dream.
Oh, late at night. But, you know, I think if you're going to be a creator, you have to be a dreamer, and you have to always keep dreams ahead of you. And that's what I tell young people when I talk to them. You've got to have a passion. You've got to have a dream. You have to have something to yearn for.
What came first? The teaching, the writing, both? Did they arrive simultaneously?
I think the teaching came first. I taught for 20 years, grades 7 through 12, and I loved it. I mean, I was good at it. Teaching was my heart and my passion. But I always knew that I could write. I never really tried. And I think sometimes you have to live long enough so that you have something to say. So after teaching for a while, I entered a short story contest and actually won. And Alex Haley, who wrote Roots, sent me a letter and said, "You're a good writer." So I said, "Well, gee, I should write a whole book." And so the first book was called Tears of a Tiger, and that was 20 years ago.
I see what you mean, though, about it. It's like you have to accumulate a certain number of life experiences anyway to be able to write some really good and interesting stuff.
I think so. Sometimes I get 12-year-olds that say, "I wrote a book, it's 500 pages. I said, "You don't know 500 things. You're 12."
And how did they take that?
Well, I tell them to, you know, I always encourage them. I say, you know, write what you know, write what you feel, but take your time. They all want to be, you know, they all want to be rich and famous immediately.
Hmm. Has your writing always been aimed for basically the younger end of the people you once taught?
The books I write for are for 10-year-olds up to high school. So I have a stack for the teenagers, the 13 to 17 group, and then I have a stack for the younger ones, for 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. So, and many of them cross over and can be used in any grade. And a lot of my books are used with adults as well.
Now, Stella by Starlight in particular, this latest work, is meant generally, it would seem, for a 9 to 13-year-old audience. It takes place in rural North Carolina during the Depression. And Stella's family and community are trying to live lives of dignity in an impoverished and segregated world. And then the Ku Klux Klan becomes active again in that area. You find a way to smoothly blend violence, or the threat of violence anyway, and the emerging feelings of early teens throughout the book. How do you know, as you're going through, Sharon, what's too scary to write but still manage to keep it real? How do you find that balance?
It is difficult to find the right balance, but I try to think like an 11-year-old, like a 12-year-old. Generally, an 11 or 12-year-old today doesn't have a real good sense of what went on in 1932. For that matter, they don't have a real good sense of what went on a couple of years ago or yesterday. So I try to think like they would think, and I explain enough so they will know. And what I wanted to do was focus on family, focus on community, focus on the heart of that community, so that regardless of where or when it takes place, it's the family and it's the community that comes together to rally when there's difficulties. And that's still true today.
Or it takes more than one person being heroic. It takes a lot of people working together.
Absolutely.
Is that still a tricky notion to get across to today's kids, particularly kids who are, you know, used to doing things like, you know, being the best at their video game or whatever?
I think when I talk to young people, that the thing that is most important to them is their family, their mom, their dad, their sister, their brother, where they live. And if you ask them just to sit down and start writing about the thing that is most important to them, family will come first, sometimes pets, but it's always family and home that comes first. And kids that are well-grounded, you know, write that, and kids who are yearning for families that are stable and families that are home, go there first. So I think if I focus on family and then expand it into community and then show them how that works together, it seems to be working for me.
The is there a life, is there some portion of your own life or your own family history that that is the kernel of Stella by Starlight?
Oh, yes. When I was a little girl, I used to go to North Carolina, where my father is from, and spend time at my grandmother's house. And we would sit on the front porch at night, and the old people would sit around and tell just outlandish stories, and I would listen quietly and pay attention while we sipped lemonade. But I didn't have any idea. It's not like I was taking notes. I was 10 years old. But I was absorbing the flavor of the stories, the tales, the history, the body language of the people, all of that. And we would go every summer. So I found out many, many years later that my grandmother, when she was 10, 11 years old, used to write in a journal at night. And when she passed away in 1983, I was given the one remaining copy of these notebooks that she scribbled in. And so that became the kernel for the book. So my grandmother is my inspiration.
A little girl growing up in the South during the Depression, facing racism and poverty and more. That is the story of Stella by Starlight by Sharon Draper. Sharon joined us a couple of years ago to talk about that book and her entire body of work, which is vast. More from that interview on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Sharon Draper is an author and an educator, honored many times over for both her writing and for her teaching. She was once the National Teacher of the Year. Sharon's cranked out more than 30 books, most of them for younger readers, but like a good teacher, she takes on subjects of importance in her works. Stella by Starlight concerns a girl growing up in the Depression-era South, confronted by the Ku Klux Klan and other forces. We did get some phone calls the first time this aired, but can't take any new phone calls or emails today. As we return to the interview, Sharon just mentioned receiving the gift of the last surviving journal of her grandmother. So what a find this is then, or at least what a great gift to get these notebooks that your grandmother had yes, written many years ago. Tell us about the process of delving into those.
Well, I only have one. And we're not really sure how many that she had. There wasn't a whole lot of value kept on the scribblings of a little girl. And so the fact that she was able to hold on to this one is so very significant to me. But in it, she wrote her thoughts, she wrote her feelings, she wrote, you know, her dreams. And she was just a little girl. She wasn't allowed to continue through school because back when she was a little girl, education for girls was not considered important. And so she was discouraged from continuing her learning, but she was the one in the family who had the passion for writing, and it wasn't recognized. And so it was kind of passed down to me, and I didn't even know it until I was grown.
How much do you include in this or any of your books? How rigorous are the details that correspond to what things were like, the poverty, the oppression, the racism? I mean, you know, again, you're trying not to make it too scary for younger readers as well, but you're also trying to make it real.
Right.
I'm trying not to ask the same question, but I guess what I'm getting to is do you leave some things out in describing the time in which your grandmother lived and which Stella lives?
Probably I softened it a little bit because, you know, I wanted to focus on still being 10 years old in 1932. The area was beautiful. The skies were clear. The scenery was just untouched. And there was a freedom there that kids had that modern children don't have. They could run and play, and they could, you know, they had freedoms that modern kids don't share because it's not even safe to let our kids go out and run in the woods. So they had that. And she had a very strong, very protective family around her. And the community was very protective, so that if somebody was threatened, they all came together in a rush to take care of it. And I remember that community when I was little, and it's completely fictional. The community that I created, Bumblebee, North Carolina, is completely fictional. But it's based on the spirit of that, of my grandmother's community, when from my memories of being a little girl, how everybody stood up for everybody else, how if there was a wedding or a funeral or a problem or somebody was hungry, the people of the community would kind of go to that person and give them what they needed. It was shared, and that's where their strength came, was from each other. That's what I tried to pass along to the kids today.
And Sharon, it sounds like you have an amazing ability to hold on to some of the feelings you had while you were a little kid. I mean, when you were talking about that, you know, it was a great area where everything was still fairly wild, you had sunshine, and I mean, all the things that kids enjoy, and they're not focusing on things like how we're going to make the ends meet, how we're going to put food on the table, the things that adults think about.
Right.
It's a great capacity, it sounds like, to be able to continue to put yourself in a kid's place.
It's a child's world, and that's who I have to write for. I do not write for grown-ups, and I write for the children who read it so that they can get into this world and say, wow, I could do that, or that's what I would do, or that's how I would respond, or I'm proud of Stella because she was brave, or something like that, not on the poverty that an adult might have to deal with.
Sharon Draper, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, author of many books. Her latest is Stella by Starlight. How much does your child bear any resemblance to what Stella lived through?
My childhood?
Mm-hmm.
No, but I did have a lot more freedom than kids do today. I remember riding my bike and going basically where I wanted to go as long as I was home by dinner time. And all of my friends remember that kind of freedom where we knew our neighborhood, everybody in the neighborhood knew everybody else, and we all had to be home, you know, by the time the streetlights came on, but there was a certain freedom there. And I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, which was a big city. I didn't grow up in the South.
I hear that a lot, particularly from baby boomer kids, talking about the very same situation you're describing here, where mom just said, as long as I'm home for dinner, everything's fine. Kids don't seem to get that freedom these days, and yet we keep reading the statistical information that crime rates are down, all that stuff. So why are kids so much more reined in than they used to be?
Well, we are more fearful now for our children. We are more aware of the dangers for our children. Our children have a lot more electronic comforts at home that keep them inside. They talk to each other online. They text, they email, they talk through games, rather than go outside and play like they used to. But I think as parents, we're a lot more careful about what we let our children do, and that's just because of the way the world is now.
We just asked about your childhood and whether it was anything like Stella's. Apparently not growing up in urban Cleveland, but I mean, you must have experienced some racism yourself growing up, and that must color your work and some of what you wrote in this book.
I probably did. My mother shielded me from a lot of the racism that probably was in my world. I had a really happy childhood, very secure, very stable. And whatever terrors were out there, my mother made sure that they did not affect me directly. As I got older, you know, I became aware, of course, of things, of unfairness, of things, mistreatment and those kinds of things. But I was sheltered as a child and did not experience a lot, at least that directly affected my life as far as I am aware. As I became older, it became a lot more apparent.
In what sense? How?
Oh, things like places that I remember not being able to ride on the streetcar in Cleveland, Ohio. And I must have been 5 or 6 years old. But my mother said, well, we don't need to do that. We're just going to take the bus and we're going to walk. And she didn't make an issue of it. So it didn't bother me until older when I realized that, for example, when we went on these trips south to go visit my grandmother, my father and his friends would have a meeting in the living room before we left, and the men would say, this is a safe gas station. You can take your kids here. Do not go here. Drive straight through this state. Don't stop at all. This is a safe place. This is a safe place. And the men of the community would pass that information along. We didn't have the internet. So the men would say, these are safe places where you can take your kids and they will be allowed to go to the bathroom.
Wow, it almost sounds like a military campaign, planning strategies and tactics just to get from one place to another.
But it was that same kind of family community spirit. It was just what they did. It wasn't like it was planned. It's just, this is what you did to survive. Oh, you're going down to North Carolina? Okay, let me tell you which road to go. Don't take this road, take this road. And it worked.
Sharon M. Draper, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a noted author and educator. Her latest book is Stella by Starlight, about a little girl growing up in Depression-era South and facing racism in the Ku Klux Klan. Let's talk about process here. When you lay out a book like Stella by Starlight, do you know what's going to happen at the end when you get into it, or is it something you kind of let Stella figure out as she goes along?
I never know where it's going to go. I have this plan. I will write this book about my grandmother as a child, and it will go here, and it never does, because the character takes over, and the character is not my grandmother anymore. The character is now Stella, and Stella is her own person, and she makes her own choices and makes her own mistakes and has her own problems, and so it becomes completely fictional and completely out of my control. So that when I finish, it's like, wow, that ended up really good, and that wasn't where I wanted it to go at all. So I let the character determine where the plot will go.
Have there been books, though, where you got to the end of it and you went, you know what, forget it. I'm going back 3 chapters, ripping those out, and then we're going to finish this again.
Oh, yes. The revision process is brutal, absolutely brutal. Anybody who thinks you can write a book and then publish a book is delusional. It went through major, major, major revisions and then all the minor revisions. But it started, the book that Stella by Starlight started out as is very different from the finished version because it gets better, it gets improved. And I have a very good editor at Simon & Schuster. Her name is Caitlin DeLowey, and she is just really, really good. And she makes me see how to improve it. Okay, chapter 12 not working, Sharon. Let's let's see what we can do to strengthen that. She doesn't tell me what to do, but she tells me that chapter 12 is weak. And so I go back and I say, yeah, she's right, and I fix it and I strengthen it and I add a character or an event or a fire or some event that brings the community together. So it took about 3 years to write the book.
Stella, in particular, is a very sharp cookie. I mean, she is afraid, certainly, when she sees the Klan burning a cross, but she also notices details that help her identify the people who are members of the Klan at that time. And is this unusual, you think, for a kid, or is this something you've noticed in a lot of kids, that they really are that good at picking up details?
I have grandchildren about that age, and my 12-year-old granddaughter notices everything, every single detail of my life. Constantly. They tend to be very observant. But Stella, as a character, has to notice so that it becomes part of the plot. You know, so I have to weave her observances in so that she is aware of what's going on. It's not like she can do anything with the information, because if she were to go to the authorities, she wouldn't be helped. So it's not about solving that particular problem. It's about how the community is going to face this threat and still survive as a functioning community, and they do.
Is it partly about finding limits, the limits of the social system of the time or the hierarchy or things like that, or pushing beyond them? I mean, can you manage to accomplish both in one book for kids?
I don't think it's about limits. I think it's about opportunities, because Stella has trouble with her writing, and she feels limited, and she thinks like she ought to be able to write better than she does, and it frustrates her. So when she finds that outlet and finds that she can handle words and that she can write well and that she has something to say, that can lead to her future of being able, of being limitless, because she can write it all down.
Got it. So she can actually portray the, she can do something to keep a chronicle of her time and ultimately do something about it.
She actually does write a story in the book that talks about what she saw. But it's a school assignment. It's not like she's reporting it to anybody, but she writes it down. And I think that whole idea of telling young people that if you are able to write down what's in your mind, you save it forever.
Sharon Draper, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, her latest of many books, Stella by Starlight. You've dealt with some fairly comprehensive and, you know, challenging topics for kids in your books. I mean, tell us about the approach that you bring to that.
Well, the most recent one before this was Out of My Mind. And Out of My Mind is about a little girl who can't walk, can't talk, can't do anything. She's in a wheelchair, and she is completely incapable of handling life at all, and yet she's brilliant. It's her mind that is absolutely brilliant, so she spends most of her time being very, very frustrated because nobody knows that she has this brilliant mind inside. So how she manages to learn to communicate and let people know who she is and what she is and what she has to offer is her message. And that book has just really, really soared. It's been translated into like 10 different languages, and it's been on the New York Times bestseller list. And that one is the one that speaks to a lot of people, because a lot of people feel frustrated and unable to communicate and to say what they need to say.
In fact, I'm told that my neighbor's middle school-aged daughter read the entire book out loud to her mother. She loved it so much, which I'm sure you've heard before.
That's amazing.
What do you think about when people come and bring their own experiences back to you when you meet them and they want to talk to you about your book?
Well, I'm very, very humbled, and I love talking to people about the book, about any of the books. And I learn when I talk to people, when I talk to young people especially. It helps me know what I need to write next. I need to deal with this particular issue. A lot of kids are feeling afraid of you know, the future. A lot of kids are worried about their parents getting divorced. And so just through normal conversation with young people, I get ideas for other things that they might want to read. And they don't even know it until I write it, and then they say, yes, this is what I needed. Thank you for writing this book. And they tell me that all the time. It's very, very gratifying, very humbling.
So, Sharon, aside from the fact you don't have to spend all those hours in the classroom, although you do have to spend it writing, I mean, I can imagine that there's a greater sense of freedom in being able to respond to the needs of young people through that writing.
Yes, there's a lot of freedom, but it's also, I have literally a stack of unanswered letters that have come from young people that have written to me to say, I read your book. Your book changed my life. Your book was the best thing I've ever read. What else have you written? Can you help me with this? And, you know, I feel a sense of responsibility to those young people.
That's a pretty heady responsibility, I think. So are you going to answer those letters eventually?
I'm going to do my very best.
All right. I want to move into the discussion of education as we round the bend toward the end of the program in about 20 minutes. You're very much apparently up on current education requirements. So even though you're not a classroom teacher now, right, but it sounds like you're totally in tune with what the requirements are.
Right. I keep up with what they're doing with the Common Core. I have study questions on my website for every single book. And these are not study questions written by some company that asks questions like, what color was the blue button on Mary's blue dress? it's questions like, how do you think Mary felt that day when she was alone? Those kinds of questions, thought questions, discussion questions, valid, educationally sound questions. And I have prepared study questions for every single book, including Stella by Starlight.
Sharon Draper from 2015 talking about both education. She is a teacher, once the National Teacher of the Year, and writing. She wrote Stella by Starlight before this interview. We'll get back to the discussion of that book and a discussion of education in America with Sharon Draper from 2015 in a minute 20 here on the Jefferson Exchange. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Sharon Draper joined us in January 2015, and there was so much to talk about. Sharon is a teacher and author, honored many times for both pursuits. Her book about racism in the Depression-era South for younger readers is Stella by Starlight. We got calls the first time this aired, but can't take any new calls or emails today. So how long, as we mentioned coming into the break, you're very much up on making sure that study questions stay up with things that teachers do need to be asking their students, ways to probe their minds. Let me get a sense of what you feel about the general state of the educational system, because we wring our hands about it a whole lot in this country.
Oh, dear. They should make me queen of education.
Forget the czar. Go straight to queen.
Yes, exactly. We really need to focus more on the children and less on the testing. I think the testing has gotten out of hand, and I think that if we just let teachers teach and let children learn, and we take away all the high-stakes things that I don't think really have a whole lot to do with education, you'll never hear a child say, oh, my goodness, the thing I remember most about fourth grade was that day we took all those tests. You know, the kids will remember projects they did and, you know, the time we went outside and studied trees or the time we learned about Egypt. I think we kind of overdo it with the testing, and we're missing out on teaching opportunities because we're taking so much time to test them, we don't have time to teach them.
It seems like a lot of this was already coming to the fore while you were still teaching. I mean, we've been talking for a long time about ways to improve school performance, but it seems like it always does come down to, but how are the students doing on tests?
Yes. I think we're spinning our wheels, and I've been in education long enough to know that about every 15 or 20 years it completely changes, and they say, we have a new way of doing things, and we need to get off of this one and go to the next one, which I hope is an improvement of the current system.
So if we do focus on the students then and in ways that don't involve testing, is that a bit more labor intensive? Do we need more teachers then, or at least more good teachers?
We need teachers who are highly paid and highly respected. Like in Japan, the teachers are, you bow down when a teacher comes into the room because that person is respected. We need someone that they're highly educated, highly paid, highly respected, and they know how to do their job. I didn't say don't test at all. I'm just saying we have focused on the testing, not the teaching, and that's backwards.
It seems like when a lot of these standardized tests came in, and I was working in the field as a reporter a lot more at the time, the general fear given among educators was it means we're going to be teaching to the test. The assurance from administrators was no. The test will just be sort of a baseline. But in fact, I hear it a lot more, having had foster kids in school for 9 years, that it is very much about teaching to the test.
Absolutely, it is to teaching to the test. And somebody is making an awful lot of money preparing tests. It's certainly not the teachers. And I just can't say enough how we are going in the wrong direction. We need to nurture. Nobody thinks about the third grader who's sitting up in a classroom who just wants to understand how to do division or how to do math or what the names of those stars are that he sees at night. And we're not doing that because if it's not on the test, it's not even taught.
So, Sharon Draper, do we start in the schools? Do we start? Does some of this have to come home? I mean, do we need to put some of the focus there as well to make sure that students are prepared by the family to do the good work in school?
Right. I think if we start by reading to children when they're born and encouraging reading in the home so that when children come to school, they are ready to learn. If we have teachers who are prepared to teach them to learn, kids will learn. And if you want to give a test at the end of the year to prove that, great. But let's teach the children. That's my final say on the educational problems.
All right. We have another phone.
They should make me queen.
They should. Okay. We have a call here from Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sharon Draper.
Yeah. Hi, Jeffrey. Hi, Sharon. And Sharon, thanks so much for, I hadn't heard of your books before, but it looks like a wonderful resource. What was that website where you can get the questions and stuff?
It's SharonDraper.com.
Okay, that's for you.
MyName.com. And
already
the study questions and everything that you need about all of the books at that site.
Yeah, well, I'm late in life. I discovered that I really love working with preschoolers, and I'm happy to say that there are more books aimed at a more diverse population. You know, children of color, than there used to be. 4 years ago, I worked for a preschool for a while, and I did a study of all the reading materials in the classroom, and I was astonished at how little there was for kids of color to identify with. And so I'm happy to see that there are some really good resources out there. I am 100% on board with everything you said about education. This whole testing thing is completely insane. And
Go ahead. And
the fact is that the people behind the so-called education reform movement, none of them are educators. They don't know the first thing about it. They're business people.
Exactly.
They want our educational system to be set up for service corporations.
Mm-hmm. On the diversity issue, there's a website called We Need Diverse Books, and they would have a lot of the books, especially the preschool that you're interested in, for the little ones. They would have... it's a good place to start to look for books that feature diverse children.
When you first began writing books, including characters of diversity, was there a paucity out there? I mean, was there still a lack of material to start with?
Well, when I was a little girl, there weren't any. I went through all my elementary school, and I think I read one book where the main character was African American. I read a lot. I was a very, very avid reader, so there was not, I know exactly how much there was. I read books about children from other countries, and I learned about the world through those books, which is a wonderful thing. But as far as books that featured children my age in books, there were very, very little. And we need more. And anybody who wants to be a writer and write these, go and write a good one.
WeNeedDiverseBooks.org is that website. We'll make sure we link to that on our website as well before the day is out. Let's take another call here. We have Julie also in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sharon M. Draper. Go ahead, Julie.
Oh, excuse me. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm in Ashland. I didn't catch that it said Mount Shasta. But anyway... I want to confirm, as I was a music teacher, a private piano teacher in the Silicon Valley in California, and I noticed a huge drop or a huge increase in the stress in my students because they were having to go through these testing programs, and they were also, I noticed a huge growth of these tutorial centers popping up like an industry, like Sylvan Learning Centers. And so it just seems like it was planned to kill the spirit of the kids and make money off how, you know, having to educate them in the way pass the test rather than to be cultivated as a human being.
You said it.
Yeah.
Another thing that is happening is that children need art and music because that is what makes us human. And a lot of times those are the programs that get cut in schools because we have to focus more on the reading and the math, and you cannot do one without the other. Art and music and all of the artistic sides of humanity is absolutely necessary for proper learning.
And so, and those do think that seem to be the first things that get cut.
Yes.
Sharon, when we talk about the sorts of things that become obstacles to education, we'd already talked about, well, first of all, just in terms of trying to compete with all the things that, that compete for the attention of kids these days, how do you feel any particular pressure when you're writing to write somewhat differently to make your books a little more interesting or have more frequent cliffhangers or something to make sure that they compete with video games or something? Or are you just working a different realm from that?
No, kids will read a good book. If the book is good, if the characters are compelling, if the plot is compelling, kids will read. It's not true that they won't pick up a book. If you put it in your hand, in their hand, and I try to make my first chapter really, really compelling so that they will keep on reading, and they get involved in the characters, kids will read. I think that the fact that people say that, well, today's young people don't read is not true, because I get hundreds and hundreds of letters of kids that say, I search for good books, and I found yours, and I'm so happy. So they will read. We just have to find the right books for them. So I try to get interesting characters, interesting plots, and just enough twist in there to keep them so that they will hang on to the end.
And are you ever surprised by the kids who say, yeah, I just ate that book and I got it done in 3 days or something?
They tell me that all the time. All the time. So it's not true that they won't read. They will read. You just have to put it in their hand. You might have to tie them to a chair, but they will read it.
All right, that was an A and B question. I didn't get to the B part, which was about, okay, so you're competing with, you know, with your books, with other things vying for the attention of kids. And, of course, they all love screens now. And, of course, the introduction of screens in schools has some people concerned, other people just praising it. We talked to a district not very long ago that provides iPads for the kindergartners. What do you think about the use of screens in education?
In my experience, if you talk to young people, they still prefer reading a book, a handheld, old-fashioned book that you hold in your hand with pages you actually have to physically turn. I think that we cannot avoid the use of screens and computers because that's how the world is moving and that's how we get our information now. But I don't want to lose books completely. I don't want to lose the art of the physical feeling of putting a baby on a lap and reading a book with them. It's different than reading an iPad with a three-year-old. So I think the screens have their place. I just don't want to lose books while we're doing that.
You have said that you think it's pretty hard to be a teenager today, and you think today's teens are drawn to some fairly deep, dark things. I mean, how much of that do you attribute to the Internet and how much to just things happening around them in the world?
When you're 13, you have a tendency to kind of focus on the dark and the dismal. That just comes with adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we should feed that, and many of the books that are out that deal with the negative societies and the dissonance books and the books that have to do with the negative parts of society, I don't think we necessarily need to feed that. Sometimes there's a book there that just touches you because it's just as gloomy as you're feeling on that day. But kids also need books that offer hope, that offer reality, that offer more than the dystopian world that is being created for them. And it kind of bothers me when I go to a bookstore and I see a whole section of dystopian novels as if this is what we are feeding our teenagers.
Surviving in the bleak landscape after whatever disaster, yeah.
Exactly. They like to laugh. They like reality. they like excitement. They like adventure. And I think we should offer them books that give them all of that. If they want to read dystopian, that's fine. But I think it's like feeding them nothing but cornflakes. They need more. They need a more variety of books to read.
Sharon, it seems like both as educator and as writer, you have this amazing ability to adjust the voice to the age group you're talking to. Is that something that can be trained? Is it something that came to you innately?
I think writing and being able to write and being able to find that voice is a gift. It's a blessing. And I can give you a class on how to write. I can give you a class on how to create voice, but being able to do that is something innate. For instance, I would love to be an operatic soprano, and you could give me lessons on it, and I would never, ever be an operatic soprano because that is a gift that I was not given. And I think we need to focus on our gifts and focus on what we do well, and I'm just blessed that I can do that. And kids seem to be reacting to that.
That's a great analogy. Thanks so much for providing that. And thanks for spending time with us. The book is Stella by Starlight. The prolific author and educator Sharon Draper has been our guest. Sharon, thanks so much.
Thanks for an amazingly wonderful interview.
All right, take care.
Okay, thank you.